Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, where I've made his post covering finance and property news. It's Monday. Edwin is here. New look, Edwin.
I have to get in early, Martin. The Albo and Co. real estate franchises are going to start rolling out. So, I need a new look. I'm going to apply for 5 franchises.
Okay, very good. Yeah, you're going in disguise, huh?
That's it, in disguise. But look, I think it's going to be hot with all the migrants coming in and the need for housing, which we're going to talk about later on, as well as a lot of other things. But look, outside of all the headaches that are around that people are facing, the economic headaches and woes that they're facing, the government, is also somewhat facing with getting a bit of opposition there with regards to the housing policies and so forth. But outside of all that, I think you got to look at the flip side, and that is just think of the opportunity to buy Albo and Co. Real estate franchises. I think they're a go. I think people should invest. I'm buying 5.
Well, the whole thing is crazy. I mean, okay, going to throw another $2 billion at affordable housing. You know, I mean, it's all political stancing, isn't it? It's not really going to make a huge amount of difference to the crisis that's been created over many, many years. And meanwhile, you know, there's firefighting going all over the place. And I think that we're missing the main story here, that, a lot of people are getting caught in the crossfire. A lot of people are still rushing to buy. I noticed that. And the listings are still ultimately down. And all of this stuff, I thought the most amusing thing, I was listening to, I think it was somebody from Queensland saying, well, that means that the policy will allow effectively social housing to be effectively created from buying construction that's already underway that was going to be for the private sector. So guess what? This is another bailout for the building sector. That's the story. That's the real story. That's the thing that nobody wants to talk about, right? They're bailing out the building sector again.
Of course, and this is what I say, Martin. Look, I'm in for 5 franchises for Albo and Co. Real estate franchises. I mean, I'm telling you, DFA have got to come in. I reckon we go all out and we buy the head franchise for Sydney region. Look, it's going to be any of our followers want in, just DM me and. We'll create a unit trust and we'll dish it out. But it's a huge bailout. In the meantime, the migration policies are going to being diluted left, right, and centre. We're going to touch a bit on that as to what the WeChat chatterers are saying. In the meantime, everybody else, the local population or the Aussies. Us Aussies are facing headaches all around. I mean, job losses, left, right, and centre. I mean, 9 News Australia just putting out a post today on Twitter. Potentially there's 20,000 jobs that may be gone from the pharmaceutical sector. Then you've got Westpac. They're dropping a lot of jobs for senior positions in from the funding area. Other followers that DM me from time to time, and so happened that this particular one DM me as well. He's in the IT industry, and his colleagues they can't get the same amount of dollars for the contracts that they were getting last year or the year before. Now they come to renewal, and they're absolutely, one, they can't find your contracts. Two, the ones that they do find are anywhere between 60-70% of what they were getting on the current contracts. So it's a big headache all around. And of course, as we said earlier on, the biggest headache is what David Taylor just put out on his tweet not too long ago, that the federal government has failed to get its key housing policy through Parliament, with the Greens and the opposition teaming up to delay debate on the legislation. I mean, it's interesting, as you mentioned earlier on, I mean, there's all these delays around housing, around public housing, around the real issues that are facing the local Aussies. But let's get Bill Gates into the country, and let's throw a couple of billion here and there, and let's order submarines that so potentially have a war with China. What is it? 2050, I think it is, that we get delivery of them. So I mean, it's a major headaches all around that we're facing. But what do you do, Martin? What do we do? Just a wait and see till it all unravels and it all falls into a great big pile.
Yeah, it is interesting. The policy positioning that's coming through, right, is just nibbling around the edge of the big morass of a problem that's been created over a couple of generations, frankly. And anything that is being preached as the solution is, just really not going to help much at all, frankly, in the scheme of things. But the politicians are falling over themselves to run away, basically. Nobody wants to really touch the critical issues. Why? Because, of course, it would be too disruptive to the property market, right? Nobody wants to see property prices fall, apart from people who want to buy in, right?
I mean, they are stakeholders. They're probably the main sector that the biggest stakeholders, second to the banks, I would say, Martin. Seriously, I mean, that's
Well,
yeah, they're huge stakeholders. I mean, all the other headaches and migraines that people are going through are the first-time buyers, which you and I've been talking about. We're really dropped by the wayside years ago. When things started changing and things started unraveling with this pandemic, and it was but I mean, it's so obvious, but yet the mainstream media failed to see it, and the politicians failed to see it. It's almost like a that it's they're purposely blindsided or blindfolded on in that area. I mean, this is the whole, and with allegedly or supposedly have a prime minister that has a heart, toward the social housing issues, because he grew up in one. So I mean, I think he's forgotten. But then again, I mean, he probably forgot it when he bought his first $3 million home at Kirribilli or some shit like that. Who knows? But the headaches roll on, Martin. The headaches roll on.
absolutely. I was to make another point. The whole focus of this amount of money in the Housing Future Fund, a small amount being created each year, now underwritten to, I mean, it's an absolute speck in the bucket, right? There is nothing in any of the policies that will fundamentally shift the dial in the context of migration. Right, which over the next 2 years is another 700,000 souls coming to Australia. I mean, I tear my hair out sometimes. If I had more hair, I would tear it out. But it's crazy, crazy, crazy.
Look, it is, and this is the whole stupidity of it all, and the mainstream are just going along with it as though everything's hunky dory. I mean, look, we inspected some homes on the weekend with some clients, and one in particular, who's now got a major headache, and he's been baptized. As I said to him, now you've been baptized. He followed me underneath the sub-floor area of a home at Blacktown, and we looked at the leaning towers of piers underneath the house as being affected by huge water flows over the wet season and so forth. The piers were sinking and everything, and as we were crawling out of there from underneath, poor bastard bumped his head. And I said, look, now you've been baptized, you can actually see. But in all that, Martin, there would have been at least 15 groups of people whilst we were there. And we got there early. We took off early as well, because we had a few homes to inspect around the Blacktown LGA.
I'll tell you what, I mean, I was a surveyor for a number of years early in my career, and the guy that was training me made precisely the same point. Until you've banged your head in a roof area and underground, you haven't qualified, right? And I can tell you, I brained myself several times trying to get into places and looking for Death Watch beetle and up in the roof trusses, looking at the the leaks in the roof. So it's an important part, isn't it?
Oh, look, it is, and at least you try to get in, Martin. Nowadays, the little princesses, they can't move, a 20-kilo bag or a 15-liter drum of paint that's in the way of the energy. I mean, on the weekend, went to an apartment complex, right, and I asked the agent for the access for the software, because it's an old 60s build apartment complex, and there's it's built on piers. And it's only two-story, three-story walk up to parts of it. So the section that I wanted to get into, that the unit that we were interested in, had a subfloor area, and I wanted to get under there just to have a quick look, through the doorway. And said, no, we don't have access. The building inspector couldn't get access. So I went and knocked on a couple of doors of the local residents, and one of them happened to be the committee person. The part of the committee, and she had a key, and said, "I see that door over there." I mean, Martin, this is the door of a normal house to get in, and I was able to get into the subfloor area, and the agent's telling that they couldn't get access, and the building report said that you can't get access. So I mean, these new breed of building inspectors aren't like you and me. They're just built differently. The princesses, they just gotta, they can't get the overalls dirty, or as you would call it, the coveralls. They can't get them dirty, or because they got to go home, with their hair combed and not a splinter in their fingers. I don't know. It's just a different game, a different perspective than what you and I, saw or see and continue to see out there. And it's a shame, but all this hype, Martin, is as I said, it's hypnotized people so much that this undercurrent of that's happening at auctions that we're seeing is just phenomenal, and prices are just going superly crazy, but all because it's really there to help those that have got money, and those that don't have struggled are just forgotten. They've just been forgotten, and all these young families, I can tell you what, they're going to be thinking twice at the next election. You can be assured.
Well, the trouble is, of course, both sides of politics are tarred with the same brush here. So I'm not sure that changing horses, as it were, politically makes a lot of sense. Let's move on. The independents. Yeah. Well, but their housing policies all over the place too. So wherever you turn, right, nobody wants to touch this large, smelly thing that we've got, right? It's. I mean,
people need to rise up, Martin. People need to rise up.
That's right. Create a new housing-led political party that we're going to solve the housing problem, right? Because actually, it is probably one of the most significant issues now facing Australians, but also other countries too. In the UK, so for example, they've just come out and said more than 1 million people are in the UK are now going to get caught with these significant rises in interest rates, a lot of homelessness. So these thematics that we talk about in Australia, I'm seeing in the UK exactly the same. It is a failure, a political failure, an economic failure, a social failure. And the consequences, of course, hit those least able to deal with it, right? Because, of course, if you've got a property without a mortgage, or if you've got a significant amount of income coming in, it's not really going to hit you. But it's the ones that actually are in that other bucket, the strugglers, the people who are really caught, and more are falling into that bucket. So this is a significant long-term social issue. And I get very concerned that the politics of it overtake what really needs to be done. But, hey, that's why I'm not in politics, I guess.
Well, that's it.
Let's go to WeChat chat, right? So the local chatters, the migration gates are open. Let them come.
Oh, look, let them come. This is it. In May of this year, the local chatters, this is the hot topics that are on the local WeChat chatter platforms. May they saw the the biggest number of surge of refugee application visas. And now, what's so significant about that is, in a nutshell, what they're saying in our migration laws are saying what this does, Martin, is this potentially gives the people that have been staying overstayed the local visas, what we refer to as the ghost migrants. They've overstayed their visas. Now they can basically make an application for refugee status, and guess what? Walk straight into pretty much 8 years of being able to work lawfully. The biggest groups that in this surge of refugee application visas that have been noted from May are obviously your Chinese chatterers and the Indian community. So for what reason other than but for the as we said earlier on, that the government is really turning a blind eye to a lot of this, and really they really want their construction industry to kick along, and also hospitality and services industry, which then obviously as now they because now they can actually work lawfully, they can now then open proper bank accounts, they can do a lot of other things. So it's going to put a huge strain on the taxpayer and the local economy. But what they're aiming to do is that the masters or the big brothers in the chatter groups are saying what that will basically mean is that hopefully we're going to see a drop in the exorbitant pays that are being asked for cash on hand, payment structure that they're being under. Because as you know, if I pay somebody $100, let's say, to do a job, cash in hand, but I've got to draw that from my company account, well, guess what? I'm paying $137 effectively because I wear the $37, taxable output that I've got to hand over to the government. So it's not cost effective. So, well, there you go, Martin. There's one way to that the government's looking at dialing down the cost of the construction cost. But as we shared a couple of weeks ago, the masters, the bigger bosses, the developers, and the builders, they're not passing those cost cuttings down to the consumer or to the to the clients just yet. I reckon it's probably going to play out for another 3 to 6 months before we get any cost savings and we see a significant reduction in prices for for renovations or works around homes or even buildings or even in the bigger players, the bigger developers, for those costs to go down if they do. I mean, it's still a big question mark.
Absolutely right. And going back to the WeChat chats, the example of a family that had been in Sydney for what, 3 days, and then bought a $4.76 million home. I mean, that shows you the caliber of the people that's coming to the country. Some of them can afford to pay big bucks.
Yeah, and this is what we've been saying, and we spoke earlier on. If the numbers stay very low, as we spoke towards the end of last year, Martin. We said that the WeChat chatterers, the local WeChat chatterers, are going to drive the prices back up beyond 2021, and this is what's been happening, and this their predictions are playing out. So there's a lot less listings on the market. So these families that just migrated to Australia and bought a home in Lynfield for $4.76 million. They've only been here for 3 days, right? And guess what? The pitch to the Chinese community from the agent. I know the agent. We know the agent well. The pitch to the community was, look, you can buy this home renovated, or you can knock it down because the council's really cool bananas with knocking it down and letting you build something new. So they're more or less seeing this as land value. This is the kind of money. Let's put it this way. The people have come in recently, but their money's been here for a while. So yeah, it's hard to get money out of China unless you've got really, really strong connections. And look, let's face it, there's a lot of them that have got really strong connections. But for this price point at this entry level, this money's been here for a while. So this is the chatter around what's happening here and in that property. In the next slide, that you show that purchasing chats would where. within 90 seconds, the chatterers went all local and recent arrivals went all out, and paid something like $3.5 million for an average home in Chatswood. That more than likely they'll knock it down and rebuild something new again. This is what the local communities are facing. This is what the local people are facing because of the low listing numbers and the appetite from the local WeChat chatterers as well as the new arrivals. But let's make no qualms about it, Martin. This money's been here for a while. It's been parked. The people are just arriving now. And this all comes back to what we spoke in early 2022 with that whole Rangzhou philosophy, which is run at any cost from China and take whatever you can from China, and from early 2022. But we already said potentially we could be here. I think it's, and unfortunately with the low numbers, it's going to get worse unless those numbers double. Unless those not that double over spring and going into summer.
Absolutely. And just another context for that, and in the first article, there was an article saying you need to build 329 new homes per day just for migrants, right? I mean, that's the quantum that we're actually, so the surge is coming in, and of course the building approvals at the moment continue to fall rather than rise. So there's a massive gap. Well, guess what happens? Significant supply versus demand. That tends to put more upward pressure on prices. And those who are able, such as the examples we looked at, just can bid up and drive the prices higher. It's pretty scary just to think about what is likely to happen as this plays out. Was it 1,300 new migrants come to Australia every day? Something like that. Look at what's happening in New York.
Look, exactly. This is then again, our boy Dom flagged it. If you recall last year, he flagged it that the state government flagged if you've got empty rooms, you can, why don't you reach out for the young people to,
yep,
to
share your house, let your house. That's what they're doing in New York.
And that was one of the reasons why you moved to England, Martin. Because you didn't want to share your 10-bedroom house with people from Wollongong, because you heard that Uppercut Adams was trying to buy and he couldn't find anything, so you wanted to run away.
Had 10 bedrooms, but no, absolutely right. I mean, it's crazy, and it just shows you the quantum that's required versus the quantum of action that's actually being politically preached at the moment. I guess the other point, going on through the articles, right, the agents are taking greater and greater and greater risks to try and get any listings at all that they can.
Oh, this is going to, sooner than later, that we raised the issue last week, as to how properties, or the week before, as to how agents are really, flaunting, or they're really flirting, flaunting, whatever you want to call it, with the law, and they are really on thin ice, because more and more I'm coming across real estate agents that are actually got properties on the market for sale without a contract of sale for sale, and not only that, but as we shared, there was one agent in the Bankstown region that actually took a property to auction, although he didn't. There wasn't an auction there as such, because he alleged that when I spoke with him, he alleged that the property was sold the day before I called him, and the auction was due the following within 6 days from when I called him. He alleged that the property had already been sold, which is all furbies, because I was talking to the agent that actually had the open listing in front of me. And she didn't know. I mean, it was just a mess. But bottom line is, both agents had contracts of sale that were 3 years old. One had advertised on Domain in real estate that the property was going to auction, so he's physically advertising the property for sale without a contract, for sale, and without a selling agency agreement. I mean, they're flaunting, they are really flaunting and flirting with the law. Now, the latest one, Martin, is, see, we've got access, we've got paid access to CoreLogic backend and a number of other websites that allow us to and give us information that have got old data. Some of it is not updated, and in many cases, when properties are going through probate, a lot of the new people that are going to be on title, whether it's siblings or whether it's the spouse that gets left behind, is going to be the sole person on title and so forth. Until all probate happens, none of that changes, right? So what agents are doing is what is very is unethical and is unconscionable, and they are trawling through that site. So, and I mean, we're not meant to. As I said, it's unconscionable, and they're calling the people direct from these websites. The main one being CoreLogic, and they are calling. And guess what, Martin? As of today, one of our followers and one of our clients has actually said, "Oh, so and so real estate from such and such area called us and asked for my and asked for my dad because wanted to know if we were interested in selling the home." I mean, his father passed away over a year, just a bit on a year ago or so, and probate hadn't happened. And I mean, not only did they did one of the agents from that office call, but another the licensee, I believe, called a second time asking for the same thing. And so when you've got the spouse that is still grieving, when you've got family members that are still grieving and they're asking for a person that's passed away and just bringing back memories, I mean, this is just unconscionable. But this is what they're doing, Martin. This is the risk that agents are taking and are doing. Because there's just not enough listings. It's really, on the one hand, you want to castigate them so much to basically, throw the book at them, but on the other hand, you sort of think, shit. I mean, if you're not getting the listings to make the money, you're obviously not putting food on the table, right? And the third one is something that George, which we've had on the show previously from ITC, what we're finding out and what he's found out, and he's really all over it, is that there's a lot of offices. The majority of offices, we're thinking it's anywhere between 70 to 75% of real estate office and real estate license holders are practicing without proper insurance cover, Martin, because what he's found out of recently, and he's sent the paperwork to the powers that be, the fair trading and different ministers. And basically the insurance companies that are supposed to be insuring us, right, to cover us for all sorts of issues, guess what? Seven or eight of those things that we're meant to be covered for and that we're meant to be covered under the regulations and the legislation, we're not. So unless your insurance policy is up to date and unless you've got those specific items not as not how can I put it, not taken out or unless you've got them specifically that you're going to be insured for, you're not covered under the legislation, and that's a hell of a lot of offices and that's a hell of a lot of risk. So what's happening out there, I mean, it's a shambles. It really is. And again, it's becoming more of a dog eat dog out there with amongst the officers, chasing the listings. And in that, they are just flirting with the law.
Absolutely. Well, the dynamics are such that there's a desperation out there. And I've actually heard a few other people also being approached by agents after a bereavement and trying to, say, well, maybe you should think about putting the property on the market. We can give you an appraisal, et cetera, which again, I agree is unconscionable. So crazy times. But hey, the numbers are higher this week, Edwin. in Sydney, the listings. Hey, yay. Maybe it's a, this is the big turnaround. Okay. So last week, Monday the 12th, 14,345. This week, 14,486. Oh, so not much then.
Well, look, at least it's moving, right? Now, it's if you look over the last 3-4 weeks, they're more or less averaging around the same figures. But it's, you know, when you look at the home listings, they're really, really low. Apartments are, you know, averaging around your mid 6,000s. But the interesting thing between for this week's numbers, and I'll flag it as we're going to be moving into the numbers for Melbourne, is how there's you know, almost you know, for almost five times more land envelopes for sale in Melbourne than there is in Sydney, and that's been I've noticed that over the last month or two, and that's been growing in Melbourne. So obviously there's a hell of a lot more subdivisions coming up, and you know, big property's been put on the, you know, land being put on the market, and it's just been piling up. That's just an interesting point. Other than that, we're well and truly into the winter solstice or the winter cycle. So I really don't expect these numbers to go north. You know, if anything, they may drop a little bit more. I hope not, but you know, they may drop a little bit more. And this is really a time to be sober, more so than ever. And you know, and if you don't get it at the price that you want it, and if you don't, and this isn't a time to take risks, because look, at the end of the day, even the agents that I speak to on the ground, they're all saying a lot of vendors are holding back until spring. So, but we know that spring is really the season where people are motivated, more people are motivated to sell. So by nature and historically, we will get those spring numbers rise. So even if numbers have gone down in certain suburbs from 27 listings, this is home listings, from 27 to 7 or 8, but you can be assured that at least in spring, you're going to have 12 or 13, right? So you got a little bit more choice, but it's definitely not a time to just go all in on emotion and get caught up with that undercurrent, and more to the point, without doing your due diligence and also without understanding who's on the other side, who's got the other bidding card that you're competing with, whether they're a flipper, a developer, or or a WeChat chatter, or a little auntie with deep pockets that, you know, they've got a different reason for buying that piece of land and that house.
Yeah, that motivation difference, as we've discussed previously, is critical to understand, right? So if you're a first-time buyer and you're up against people who might be thinking it from a development standpoint, or from an investment standpoint, or indeed from a WeChat chat bot purchaser, they've got a different pain point, price point, whatever you want to call it. So very important to understand. Just in terms of Melbourne, you're right. properties for sale in Melbourne the week of the 12th of June, 21,347. This week, 21,355. So, well, you know, line ball. But you're right about the land and the land subdivisions in and around the Melbourne suburbs. That the planning regulations there have actually effectively been released to the point where you can subdivide to Billio, and you're seeing a lot of small parcels coming up. Of course, Sydney is following the same way, but not quite to the same extent, which is one of the reasons why you're seeing the land sitting there. But interestingly, in some regional areas in New South Wales, the land subdivisions that were flowing are hardly selling at all at the moment. So there's something very significant happening in regional New South Wales with regards to land packages. And I think that's because people are now beginning to think more about buying closer into the city rather than in the regional areas.
Yeah, and it all goes back to what we've also discussed, which you've covered very well, and that is with the banking sector, with the banking, the banks, pulling out of regional towns.
Yep.
I mean, if you don't have a physical bank, I mean, It's like, if you don't have a your local pub, what do you do? I mean, the town shut down, right? So and the bank is very integral to the whole community, and it, because of the aging populations as well in a lot of these towns. So people are naturally going to gravitate and move, pick up stumps and move closer to the CBDs or the city regions, or to secondary cities. But even then, you see, you look at the at the cost of home and land packages or new homes or established homes in around Orange and Bathurst, and you see how they've increased in value, all because, again, because of the towns that have been further out and been decimated by the banks, walking out, and businesses being hard hit, by the whole pandemic and everything else. It's and also the natural disasters. It's just driving people closer to the East Coast. So yeah, so you've got that. But look, again, I'm, I can see, there's a window of opportunity for many that are willing to travel back, maybe not as far as original, back into the original New South Wales, but there's a lot of scope now. You can sort of see, within a 45, 50 kilometer radius of Sydney CBD, where again, because of people have move closer to the city, but now they're finding that the prices are not something that they can afford. I can see people making that sacrifice of living a bit further out from your CBDs, and being prepared to commute that extra 20 minutes, half an hour, albeit on the train, to go to work. But make that sacrifice, but at least you've got a roof over your head. Or what's the alternative, Martin? Is be cramped in a two-bedroom apartment, with three kids and two adults. We went to an ins we inspected an apartment in the West. Now that I've got that in thought in mind, is we inspected an apartment in the West, and what we noted were that in this two-bedroom apartment, in the West, there was two, four, six adults and two children in a two-bedroom apartment. And that's all they could afford. That's all they could afford. It was owner-occupied, but that's all they could afford, Martin. They're obviously looking at selling it to in order to buy something, but they said the only way that we can house the amount of people that we've got in this two-bedroom apartment is if we buy, way further afield.
Well, it's interesting because the statistics in terms of occupation are showing that there is now a bit of an increase again. So through COVID, a lot of people went to live somewhere separate, I guess, because they wanted the separation. And so the ratio dropped, but now it's rising again, and that's a function of price and supply and all those things. So there are definitely some people who are in more crowded conditions than previously, which is not necessarily good from a social or economic perspective, I think, but it's a necessary must. There are also, of course, people couch surfing, living in cars, living in tents, living in temporary accommodation of all sorts and sizes. So again, it just highlights just the multifaceted problems around housing in Australia. Looking at the numbers on auctions, well, not particularly high. And I guess the question is, in some areas where there's a hot market, auctions are still very much a thing. In other areas, auctions really aren't playing much of a role at the moment.
No, and the choice isn't there. The choice isn't there. So I guess in that, and I know that in the, but it sort of, I looked at some of the suburbs in what they've got in auctions, and again I go back to that discussion that we had on the show before with the other websites that now we're following. I mean, we've got a Vietnamese team member, that goes through they've got their own WeChat platform, similar to WeChat, not as robust, as WeChat, but yeah, they've got their own platform there that we were able to see properties on there. And but obviously the WeChat chatterers, I mean that thing's becoming more and more robust. There's but the thing is you've got to be able to speak the language. You've got to be able to speak Mandarin or Cantonese, and you've got to have your contacts, and you've got to be invited to certain groups in order to see what they're selling amongst each other. So that's a trend that's going to be interesting to follow moving further forward, Martin, because it's in comparison to REA and domain, it's small in terms of, but when you start sort of thinking, we start sort of thinking potentially 3, 5, 10% of homes appearing across these platforms and not appearing on REA and domain, it's there are different things, there are opportunities arise. I mean, a lot of the things that of I sit back and I sort of look at things and I'll scrutinize the prices that they're being asked. Some are asking exorbitant prices, and guess what? They're getting them. But there are others that are pretty much within the within the money and the appetite that some of our clients have. And so it's there's one thing for sure though, is that there's a lot less emotion and frenzy going on across these platforms than what you see in REA and domain. And this is what you see in these, because of the low number of auctions participating. For some reason, the whole psychology and the whole mental, every man and his dog gets caught up in the auction clearance rates, and they make that out to be the bee's knees of property buying and selling, which is, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not the only reason why we're sharing it. We share it is because it's just another pile of numbers that that we tack on to the and discuss the different things that are happening across the board. But the numbers aren't really reflective, as far as I'm concerned, of the market, let alone the auction. The so-called auction clearance rates aren't really reflective of what really goes on out at grassroots levels.
No, well, an interesting question to me, Edwin, is at what point will the mainstream media begin to latch on to the idea there's a whole shadow market for property beyond the two or three big property portals, right? And of course, there's a lot of stuff going on there that nobody ever sees. The truth is that those portals are giving us a very myopic view. Some of the data is also quite old as well, so it doesn't necessarily give you a very good read as to precisely what's going on. That said, let's look at Sydney rentals. So Monday the 12th, 11,326. Monday the 19th, 11,921. So a slight rise. But nothing really to write home about there either.
No, but it has been moving in the right direction, slowly, slowly, but surely. And this is, I'm beginning to think in some of the areas that we're seeing, in housing, is, and a lot of it has been the change in these numbers. A lot of it has been in apartments as well. Is I'm sort of thinking that, that it's your short-term accommodation type of properties are coming back to a more secure income, and the people are looking for more security as opposed to short-term. I haven't followed it up, but one of our followers DM'd me and told me that the Katoomba short-term lettings there, the Airbnb are taking a caning at the moment. I haven't checked it, but that's something that I that's been posted and somebody DM'd me, so maybe the case there. But I know of other areas where where even friends and family members that have got homes in the South Coast regions, they're opting to go to to long-term lettings for that reason. To one, their lifestyles become busier in the city for them to look after a short-term letting accommodation properties that they've got down in the South Coast regions. and two, they feel a change happening, that they feel a little bit more secure if they have somebody there, fixed, on a fixed lease for 12 months, and potentially even, one of my family members is going to, offer their potential tenants 18 months to 2 years if they're willing to take it on.
Yeah, interesting. And I think the rental dynamic is definitely on the shift in some areas. I was talking to someone the other day who, again, in regional New South Wales, has started to see quite a flood of rental properties available, and the rents are dropping. Whereas, of course, closer into Sydney, it's another story. And a lot of people, of course, have significant cash flow pressures, what with inflation and everything else. And so there's less appetite potentially to spend some of that discretionary money on going on holiday and going to Airbnb and those sorts of things. So I think that's part of the mix too. Well, as we come to the end of the show, Edwin, tip for the week, bathroom renovations. Oh dear. I'll tell you what, I reckon people have lost more money on bathroom renovations than almost anything else.
Yeah, and it's one of those prickly pears, right? And look, I just talking to the boys on the at the moment we're covering one, two, three, four, four work sites, assisting clients with small renovations. A couple of them have got bathroom renovations as well. But talking to the guys, talking to the tradies, and just things have changed rather rapidly. And look, what I can say is that that there's been a lot of changes to to the regulations around the bathroom renovations, and more to the point around waterproofing, because that's been a huge issue. And more so with the Commissioner for Property. I mean, he's made a big song and dance of late with regards to that in the high-rise developments that he's gone to, and it's basically caught a lot of people taking shortcuts, from waterproofers to tilers that aren't accredited or have some sort of accreditation or some sort of a license, but they wouldn't know how to. They would know. They don't know what they're doing. They're just following instructions and just it's happy go lucky sort of stuff. So with that, what the requirements is basically a bathroom renovation is going to take a lot longer than what it used to take, because in a nutshell, there's more coats of waterproofing required before the screeding goes on. You've got to have two coats of waterproofing. Look, in the old days though, Martin, this was standard, right? And we lost the standards, and now we go back to the old ways, right? So now there's got to be two coats of waterproofing, then the screeding, then another two coats of waterproofing on top of that, apart from everything else that goes on, right? So in that, there's drying time in between each coats, and in between the screed. And the screed's got to you got to wait minimum 5 to 7 days for it to fully dry and so forth. But what's the interesting thing that's happening around this, Martin, is that the suppliers of the materials are walking away from liability if the installer, or the applicator, doesn't that if they don't follow the instructions to the letter of the law of the of their products, which is rather interesting. It's going to be interesting how themselves are going to police that, but I'm sure they've got ways to know. And so the tip is around that is if you're thinking of getting a bathroom renovated, allow more time to get it done than what your tradesman been telling you, and keep an eye on the different applications to make sure that they're not done wet on wet when it becomes absolutely useless. And then and the second tip is you can prevent a lot of restoration work to bathrooms if you take care of small issues in the first place, like leaks around your shower screens and bad caulking, or people not even caulking the internal areas of the shower recess areas, and they just use grout. But the grout is brittle, and it washes away over time. and that's got to be corked. And you know, there are companies out there that you know, can recork, reseal, and give you a bit of peace of mind without having to go. You know, you can spend $3,000-$4,000 now on a bathroom on a shower recess area, as opposed to doing a full bathroom renovation that could end up costing you, you know, $25,000-$35,000.
Yeah, no, very good advice. And certainly when I was doing my surveying years ago, the number of times that I would see problems in and around bathrooms, you know, because of poor maintenance and poor construction. And, you know, the fact of the matter is it can be a lot of money involved. And unfortunately, your point is very right. There was a dip in standards over the last 20 odd years. So people cut corners and, you know, went around the building regs. So that was all to do with private certification and all those sorts of things we've discussed many times. Hopefully, we're now getting back to a more, you know, rigorous approach to some of these things. But it takes time. Time equals money. And I guess the question is, do you want a quality renovation or a quality bathroom, or do you want a cheap bathroom? And if you get a cheap bathroom, you may end up paying a little less up front, but down the track you're going to pay through the nose later. So it's worth doing it right, doing it proper, and making sure that you allow a sufficient time between the various stages so that effectively everything can work. It makes such a huge difference.
I guess the motivator is this, Martin. If you get it done cheaply and it screws up, and then you have to get it, you got to think of it this way: Do you really want to go outside the house, go to a port-a-loo and pee there in the middle of the winter?
Wow, that's a very good point, Edwin. But I'd also make the other point that, of course, a lot of the work is done as cheaply as possible, just to put the property on the market, and then people move.
Right? Oh yeah.
So one of the things to look out for is if the bathroom has been recently renovated prior to sale, you want to make sure that you get a check done to make sure that it's been done properly, because quite often it's very cosmetic, and that, of course, will look nice for the first month, and then it's a downhill.
As I say to people, either that or you make allowances. You make allowances in your offer. Or yep. The other one is ask the agent to get the vendor to give you the waterproofing certificates and the certificates from the adequate certificates from the people that did the bathroom renovation in the first place. I mean, the warranty's got to carry 5 years.
Yep, absolutely. Yes, it's funny, isn't it? How often, quite you look at the information in the agent's contracts, and the renovations for bathrooms were done 6 years ago. Very convenient.
Oh, you can tell which ones have just been recently done. Anyway, good to. So you got your studio back, and we should book in a live show in a week or 2 months.
No, absolutely. Well, I was thinking we might do a live one next week. The studio is back and working now. It's still not fully automated, but it's back in one piece, and I'm just putting things more and more together. But I've now got the proper lights and the proper, you know. So yeah, we should definitely do that. And I'll tell you what, taking the studio apart was a pain. Putting it back together again is a huge pain, because I've got to find out where all the bits are. You know, I put them in all the containers and label them, but trying to find them now, it's a nightmare. So it's taken me a lot longer than I expected. But I'm back on air now. And we should definitely do a live show. I'll tic-tac with you, and we'll post it, and we'll definitely do a live one.
Yeah, but look, and I'll leave you with this one. But did your makeup kit arrive? Because you can't do a live show. You got your light. You said you got your lights. You got your studio. You got your cords. You got your plugs. But what about the makeup kit?
Oh, I'll leave you to decide whether, in fact, the makeup kit arrived or not, Edwin. I won't comment on it.
All right, mate. You take care.
Thank you.
Look after yourself.
Have a good week, and talk to you next week. Take care. Bye bye. Cheers.